She thought of spending the rest of her life without a doctor, of teeth as yellow as Solo's, of caring for a growing child, and the challenge of seeing that more weren't made. At the next landing, she again touched her hip where her birth control rode under her skin. Such things made more sense in light of Silo 17. So much about her previous life made sense. Things that once seemed twisted now had a sort of pattern, a logic about them. The expense of sending a wire, the spacing of the levels, the single and cramped stairway, the bright colors for particular jobs, dividing the silo into sections, breeding mistrust. It was all designed. She'd seen hints of this before, but never knew why. Now, this empty silo told her. The presence of these kids told her. It turned out some crooked things looked even worse when straightened. Some tangled knots only made sense once unraveled. Her mind wandered while she climbed, wandered in order to avoid the aches in her muscles, to escape the day's ordeals. When she finally hit the 30s, it gave her, if not an end to the suffering, a renewed focus. She stopped trying the portable radio as often. The static never changed, and she had a different idea for contacting Walker, something she should have pieced together sooner, a way to bypass the servers and communicate with other silos. It was there, all along, staring her and Solo in the face. There was a small sliver of doubt that she might be wrong, but why else lock up a radio that was already locked up two other ways? It only made sense if that device was supremely dangerous, which is what she hoped it would be. She stomped up to 35, dead on her feet. Her body had never been pushed this hard, not even while plumbing the small pump, not during her trek through the outside. Will alone helped her lift each foot, plant it, straighten her leg, pull with her arm, lunge forward for another grab. One step at a time now. Her toe banged on the next step as she could barely lift her boot high enough. The green emergency lights gave her no sense of the passing of time, no idea if night had come, when morning would be. She desperately missed her watch. All she had these days was her knife. She laughed at the switch, at having gone from counting the seconds in her life to fending for each and every one of them. 34. It was tempting to collapse to the steel grating, to sleep, to curl up like her first night in that place, just thankful to be alive. Instead, she pulled the door open, amazed at the effort this required, and stepped back into civilization. Light. Power. Heat. She staggered down the hallway with her vision so constricted it was as if she could only see through some straw at her center, everything else out of focus and spinning. Her shoulder brushed the wall. Walking required effort. All she wanted was to go call Lucas, to hear his voice. She imagined falling asleep behind that server, warm air blowing over her from its fans, the headphones tight against her ears. He could murmur to her about the faraway stars while she slept for days and days. But Lucas would wait. Lucas was locked up and safe. She had all the time in the world to call him. She turned instead into the suit lab, shuffled toward the tool wall, didn't dare look at her cot. A glance at her cot and she'd wake up the next day, whatever day that was. Grabbing the bolt cutters, she was about to leave, but went back for the small sledge as well. The tools were heavy, but they felt good in her hands, one tool in each, pulling down on her arms, stretching her muscles and grounding her, keeping her stable. At the end of the hall, she pressed her shoulder against the heavy door to the server room. She leaned until it squeaked open. Just a crack. Just wide enough for her. Juliet hurried as much as her numb muscles would allow toward the ladder, shuffling, fast as she could go. The grate was in place. She tugged it out of the way and dropped the tools down. Big noise. She didn't care. They couldn't break. Down she went, hands slick, chin catching a rung, floor coming up faster than she'd anticipated. Juliet sank to her butt, sprawled out, shin banging the sledge. It took a force of will, an act of God, to get up. But she did. Down the hall and past the small desk. There was a steel cage there, a radio, a big one. She remembered her days as sheriff. They had a radio just like it in her office, used it to call Marnes when he was on patrol, to call Hank and Deputy Marsh. This one was different. She remembered something Lucas said once, about listening in, about wishing he could talk to her down below where it was comfortable. He meant this radio. She set the sledge down and pinched the jaws of the cutter on one of the hinges. Squeezing was too hard. Her arms shook. They trembled. Juliet adjusted herself, put one of the handles against her neck, cradled it with her collarbone and shoulder. She grabbed the other handle with both hands and pulled toward herself, hugging the cutters, squeezing. She felt them move. There was a loud crack, the twang of splitting steel. She moved to the other hinge and did it again. Her collarbone hurt where the handle dug in. Felt like it might be the thing to crack, not the hinge. Another violent burst of metal. Juliet grabbed the steel cage and pulled. The hinges came away from the mounting plate. She tore hungrily at the box, trying to get to the prize inside, thinking of Walker and all her family, all her friends, the sound of people screaming in the background. She had to get them to stop fighting, get everyone to stop fighting. Once she had enough gap between the bent steel and the wall, she wrapped her fingers around this and tugged, bending the protective cage on its front edge, tilting the box away from that wall, the shelf, revealing the entire radio unit beneath. Who needed keys? Screw keys. She wrenched the cage flat, then bent her weight on it, making a new hinge of its front, warping it out of the way. The dial on the front seemed familiar. She turned it to power the unit on and found that it clicked instead of spinning. Juliet knelt down, panting and exhausted, sweat running down her neck. There was another switch for power. She turned this one instead, static rising in the speakers, a buzz filling the room. The other knob. This was what she wanted, what she expected to find. She thought it might be patch cables like the back of the server, or dip switches like a pump control, but it was tiny numbers arranged around the edge of a knob. Juliet smiled, exhausted, and dialed the pointer to 18. Home. She grabbed the mic and squeezed the button. Walker, are you there? Juliet slumped down to the ground and rested her back against the desk. With her eyes shut, Mike by her face, she could imagine going to sleep like that. She saw what Lucas meant. This was comfortable. She squeezed again. Walk? Shirley? Please answer me. The radio crackled to life. Juliet opened her eyes. She stared up at the unit, her hands trembling. A voice.
Is this who I think it is?
The voice was too high to be Walker. She knew this voice. Where did she know it from? She was tired and confused. She squeezed the button of the mic. This is Juliet. Who is this? Was it Hank? She thought it might be Hank. He had a radio. Maybe she had the wrong silo completely. Maybe she'd screwed up.
I need radio silence,
the voice demanded.
All of them off, now!
Was this directed at her? Juliet's mind spun in circles. A handful of voices chimed in, one after the other. There were pops of static. Was she supposed to say something? She was confused.
You shouldn't be transmitting on this frequency,
the voice said.
You could be put cleaning for such things.
Juliet's hand fell to her lap. She slumped against the wooden desk, dejected. She recognized the voice. Bernard. For weeks, she had been hoping to speak to this man, had been silently begging for him to answer. But not now. Now she had nothing to say. She wanted to talk to her friends, to make things okay. She squeezed the radio. No more fighting, she said. All the will was drained from her. All desire for vengeance. She just wanted the world to quiet itself, for people to live and grow old and feed the roots one day.
Speaking of cleanings,
the voice squeaked,
tomorrow will be the first of many more to come. Your friends are lined up and ready to go, and I believe you know the lucky one who's going first.
There was a click, followed by the hiss and crinkle of static. Juliet didn't move. She felt dead, numb. The will was drained from her body.
Imagine my surprise,
the voice said.
Imagine when I found out a decent man, a man I trusted, had been poisoned by you.
She clicked the microphone with her fist, but didn't raise it to her mouth. She simply raised her voice instead. You'll all burn in hell, she told him.
Undoubtedly,
Bernard said.
Until then, I'm holding some things in my hand that I think belong to you. An ID with your picture on it, a pretty little bracelet, and this wedding ring that doesn't look official at all. I wonder about that.
Juliet groaned. She couldn't feel any part of her body. She could barely hear her thoughts. She managed to squeeze the mic, but it required every ounce of effort that she had left. What are you going on about, you twisted fuck? She spat the last, her head drifting to the side, her body craving sleep.
I'm talking about Lucas, who betrayed me. We found some of your things on him just now. Exactly how long has he been talking to you? Well before the servers, right? Well, guess what? I'm sending him your way. And I finally figured out what you did last time, what those idiots in supply helped you do, and I want you to be assured, be very assured that your friend won't have the same help. I'm going to build his suit, personally. Me. I'll stay up all night if I have to. So when he goes out in the morning, I can be sure that he gets nowhere near those blasted hills.
Silo 18. A group of kids thundered down the staircase as Lucas was escorted to his death. One of them squealed in delightful horror as if being chased. They spiraled closer, coming into view, and Lucas and Peter had to squeeze to one side to let them pass. Peter played the sheriff role and yelled at the kids to slow down, to be careful. They giggled and continued their mad descent. School was out for the day. No more listening to adults. While Lucas was pressed against the outer railing, he took a moment to consider the temptation. Freedom was just a jump away. A death of his own choosing. One he had considered in the past, when moods turned dark. Peter pulled him along, hand on his elbow, before Lucas could act. He was left admiring that graceful bar of steel, watching the way it curved and curved, always spinning the same amount, never ending. He pictured it corkscrewing through the earth, could sense its vibrations like some cosmic string, like a single strand of DNA at the silo's core, with all of life clinging to it. Thoughts like these swirled as they gained another level on his death. He watched the welds go by, some of them neater than others. A few puckered up like scars. Several had been polished so smoothly he almost missed them. Each was a signature by its creator. A work of pride here, a rush job at the end of a long day there. A shadow learning for the first time. A seasoned pro who, with decades of practice, made it look all too easy. He brushed his shackled hands over the rough paint, the bumps and puckers, the missing chips that revealed centuries of layers, of colors that changed with the times or with the supply of dyes or cost of paint. The layers reminded him of the wooden desk he'd stared down at for almost a month. Each little groove marked the passage of time, just as each name scratched into its surface marked a man's mad desire to have more of it, to not let that time whisk his poor soul away. For a long while, they marched in silence, a porter passing with a bulky load, a young couple looking guilty. Exiting the server vault had not been the stroll to freedom Lucas had longed for the past weeks. It had been an ambush, a march of shame. Faces in doorways, faces on landings, faces on the stairway. Blank, unblinking faces. Faces of friends wondering if he was their enemy. And maybe he was. They would say he had broken down and uttered fateful taboo, but Lucas now knew why people were put out. He was the virus. If he sneezed the wrong words, it would kill everyone he knew. This was the path Juliet had walked, and for the same absence of reason. He believed her. Always had. Always knew she'd done nothing wrong, but now he really understood. She was like him in so many ways. Except he would not survive. He knew that. Bernard had told him so. They were 10 levels up from IT when Peter's radio buzzed with chatter. He took his hand off Lucas's elbow to turn up the volume, see if it was for him.
"This is Juliet. Who is this?"
Oh, that voice. Lucas's heart leapt up a little before plummeting a very long way. He fixed his gaze on the railing and listened. Bernard responded, asked for silence. Peter reached for his radio, turned it down, but not off. The voices climbed with them, back and forth. Each step and each word ground down on Lucas, chipped away at him. He studied the railing and again considered true freedom. A grab and a short leap up, a long flight. He could feel himself going through the motions, bending his knees, throwing his feet over. The voices in the radio argued. They said forbidden things. They were sloppy with secrets, thinking other ears were off. Lucas watched his death play out over and over. His fate awaited him over that rail. The visual was so powerful, it wrecked his climbing pace. It affected his legs. He slowed, Peter slowing with him. Each of them began to falter, to waver in their convictions. The strength in Lucas drained away, and he decided not to jump. Both men were having second thoughts. 27. Silo 17. Juliet woke up on a floor, someone shaking her. A man with a beard. It was Solo, and she was passed out in his room by his desk.
"We made it,"
he said, flashing his yellow teeth. He looked better than she remembered him looking, more alive. She felt as though she were dead. Dead.
What time is it?" she asked. "What day?"
She tried to sit up. Every muscle felt torn in half, disconnected, floating beneath her skin. Solo went to the computer and turned on the monitor.
"The others are picking out rooms and then going to the upper farms."
He turned to look at her. Juliet rubbed her temples.
"There are others,"
he said solemnly, like this was still news. Juliet nodded. There was only one other that she could think of right then. Dreams came back to her. Dreams of Lucas, of all her friends in holding cells, a room of suits being prepped for them. No care for whether they cleaned or not. It would be a mass slaughter, a symbol to those who remained. She thought of all the bodies outside of this silo, Silo 17. It was easy to imagine what came next.
Friday,
Solo said, looking at the computer.
Or Thursday night, depending on how you like it. 2 in the morning.
He scratched his beard.
It felt like we slept longer than that.
What day was it yesterday? She shook her head. That didn't make sense. What day did I dive down, with the compressor? Her brain wasn't working. Solo looked at her like he was having similar thoughts.
The dive was Thursday. Today is tomorrow.
He rubbed his head.
Let's start over.
No time. Juliet groaned and tried to stand up. Solo rushed to her and put his hands under her arms, helped lift her. Suit lab, she said. He nodded. She could tell he was exhausted, maybe half as much as she was, but he was still willing to do anything for her. It made her sad, someone being this loyal to her. She led him down the narrow passage, and the climb up the ladder brought back a legion of aches. Juliet crawled out to the server room floor. Solo followed up the ladder and helped her to her feet. They made their way to the suit lab together. "I need all the heat tape we've got," she told him, prepping him while he escorted her. She staggered through the servers, bumped into one of them. "It needs to be the kind on the yellow spool, the stuff from supply, not the red kind." He nodded.
The good kind, like we used on the compressor?
Right. They left the server room and shuffled down the hallway. Juliet could hear the kids squealing around the bend, the patter of their feet. It was a strange sound, like the echoes of ghosts. But something normal. Something normal had returned to Silo 17. In the suit lab, she got Solo busy with the tape. He stretched out long strips on one of the workbenches, overlapping the edges, using the torch to cauterize and seal the joints. "At least an inch of overlap," she told him, when it looked like he was being shy with the stuff. He nodded. Juliet glanced at her cot and considered collapsing into it, but there was no time. She grabbed the smallest suit in the room, one with a collar she knew might be a tight fit. She remembered the difficult squeeze to get into Silo 17 and didn't want to repeat it. "I'm not going to have time to make another switch for the suit, so I won't have a radio." She went through the cleaning outfit, piece by piece, pulling out the parts engineered to fail and hunting through her hauls from supply for a better version of each. Some she'd have to seal over with the good tape. It wouldn't be as nice as the one Walker had helped arrange, but it would be a world different than what Lucas was getting. She grabbed all the parts she'd spent weeks puzzling over, marveling at the engineering it took to make something weaker than it appeared. She tested a gasket from a pile she wasn't sure about by pinching her fingernails together. The gasket parted easily. She dug for another.
"Well, how long?"
Solo asked, noisily stretching another piece of tape out.
"We'll be gone a day? A week?"
Juliet looked up from her workbench to the one Solo was working over. She didn't want to tell him she might not make it. This was a dark thought she would keep to herself. "We'll figure out a way to come for you," she said. "First, I have to try and save someone." It felt like a lie. She wanted to tell him she might be gone for good.
"What's this?"
Solo rustled the blanket of heat tape. She nodded. "The doors to my home never open," she told him. "Not unless they are sending someone to clean." Solo nodded.
"Oh, it was the same back here, back when this place was crazy."
Juliet looked up at him, puzzled, and saw that he was smiling. Solo had told a joke. She laughed, even though she didn't feel like it, and then found that it helped. "Well, we've got 6 or 7 hours until those doors open," she told him. "And when they do, I want to be there."
"And then what?"
Solo shut down the torch and inspected his work. He looked up at her. "Then I want to see how they explain my being alive. I think..." She changed out a seal and flipped the suit around to get to the other sleeve. "I think my friends are fighting on one side of this fence, and the people who sent me here are fighting on the other. Everyone else is watching. The vast majority of my people, they are too scared to take sides, which basically means they've checked out." She paused while she used one of the small extractors to remove the seal that linked the wrist to the glove. Once she had it out, she reached for a good one.
"You think this will change that? Saving your friend?"
Juliet looked up and studied Solo, who was almost done with the tape. "Saving my friend is all about saving my friend," she said. "What I think will happen when all those people on that fence see that a cleaner has come home, I think it'll make them come down on the right side of things, and with that much support, the guns and the fighting are meaningless." Solo nodded. He began to fold up the blanket without even being asked. This bit of initiative, of knowing what needed to happen next, filled Juliet with hope. Maybe he needed these kids, someone to take care of. He seemed to have aged a dozen years already. "I'll come back for you, and the others," she told him. He dipped his head, kept his eyes on her a while, his brain seeming to whir. He came to her workbench and set the neatly folded blanket down, patted it twice. A quick smile flashed in his beard, and then he had to turn away, had to scratch his cheek as if he had an itch there. He was still a teenager like that, Juliet saw, still ashamed to cry. Nearly 4 of Lucas's final hours were burned hiking the heavy gear up to level 3. The kids had helped, but she made them stop one level down, worried about the air up top. Solo assisted her in suiting up for the second time in as many days. He studied her somberly.
"Are you sure about this?"
She nodded and accepted the blanket of heat tape. Rickson could be heard a level below, commanding one of the boys to settle down. "Try not to worry," she told him. "What happens, happens, but I have to try." Solo frowned and scratched his chin. He nodded.
You're used to being around your people, he said. Probably happier there anyway.
Juliet reached out and squeezed his arm with one of her thick gloves. It's not that I would be miserable here. It's that I would be miserable knowing I let him go out without trying something.
And I was just starting to get used to having you here.
He turned his head to the side, bent over, and grabbed her helmet from the decking. Juliet checked her gloves, made sure everything was wrapped tightly, and looked up. The climb to the top would be brutal with the suit on. She dreaded it. And then, navigating the remains of all those people in the sheriff's office and getting through the airlock doors, she accepted the helmet, scared of what she was about to do despite her convictions. Thanks for everything, she said. She felt like she was doing more than saying goodbye. She knew that there was a very good chance that she was doing willingly what Bernard had attempted so many weeks ago. Her cleaning had been delayed, but now she was going back to it. Solo nodded and stepped around her to check her back. He patted the Velcro, tugged on her collar.
You're good,
he said, his voice cracking. You take care of yourself, Solo. She reached out and patted his shoulder. She had decided to carry the helmet one more flight up before putting it on, just to conserve her air.
Jimmy, he said. I think I'm going back to being called Jimmy now.
He smiled at Juliet, shook his head sadly but smiled.
I'm not going to be alone anymore, he told her.
28. Juliet made her way through the airlock doors and up the ramp, ignoring the dead around her, just focusing on each step, and the hardest part was over. The rest was open space and the scattered remains she wished she could pretend were boulders. Finding her way was easy. She simply turned her back on that crumbling metropolis in the distance, the one she had set off for so very long ago, and began to walk away from it. As she picked her way across the landscape, the sight of the occasional dead seemed sadder now than during that previous hike, more tragic for having shared their home for a while. Juliet was careful not to disturb them, passed them with the solemnity they deserved, wishing she could do more than feel sorry for them. Eventually, they thinned, and she and the landscape were left alone. Trudging up that wind-swept hill, the sound of fine soil peppering her helmet became oddly familiar and strangely comforting. This was the world in which she lived, in which they all lived. Through the clear dome of her helmet, she saw it all as clearly as it could be seen. The speeding clouds hung angry and gray. Sheets of dust whipped sideways and low to the ground. Jagged rocks looked like they'd been sheared from some larger piece, perhaps by the machines that had crafted these hills. When she reached the crest, she paused to take in the vista around her. The wind was fierce up there, her body exposed. She planted her boots wide so she wouldn't topple over and peered down into the inverted dome before her, at the flattened roof of her home. There was a mix of excitement and dread. The low sun had only barely cleared the distant hills, and the sensor tower below was still in shadow, still in nighttime. She would make it. But before she started down the hill, she found herself gazing, amazed, at the scattering of depressions marching toward the horizon. They were just like the silo schematic, evenly spaced depressions, 50 of them. And it occurred to her, suddenly and with a violent force,
that countless others were going about their days nearby. People alive. More silos than just hers and Solo's. Silos unaware, packed with people waking up for work, to go to school, maybe even to cleaning. She turned in place and took it all in, wondering if maybe there was someone else out on that landscape at the exact same time as her, wearing a similar suit, a completely different set of fears racing through their mind. If she could call out to them, she would. If she could wave to all the hidden sensors, she would. The world took on a different scope, a new scale from this height. Her life had been cast away weeks ago, likely should have ended. If not on the slope of that hill in front of her home, then surely in the flooded deeps of Silo 17. But it hadn't ended like that. It would probably end here, instead, this morning, with Lucas. They might burn in that airlock together, if her hunch was wrong. Or they could lie in the crook of that hill and waste away as a couple. A couple whose kinship had been formed by desperate talks lingering into the night. An intense bond between two stranded souls that was never spoken nor admitted to. Juliet had promised herself never to love in secret again. Never to love at all. And somehow, this time was worse. She had kept it a secret even from him, even from herself. Maybe it was the proximity of death talking, the Reaper buffeting her clear helmet with sand and toxins. What did any of it matter, seeing how wide and full the world was? Her silo would probably go on. Other silos surely would. And the things that she thought mattered suddenly shrank. It was a sad loss, this illusion of importance, a humbling blow. A mighty gust of wind struck her, nearly ripping the folded blanket out of her hands. Juliet steadied herself, gathered her wits, and began the much easier descent toward her home. She ducked down below the crest with its sobering views and saddening heights, out of the harsh and caustic winds. She followed that crook where two hills met, winding her way toward the sad sight of a couple buried in plain view, who marked her fateful, desperate, and weary way home. She arrived at the ramp early. There was no one on the landscape, the sun still hidden behind the hills. As she hurried down the slope, she wondered what anyone would think if they saw her on the sensors, stumbling toward the silo. At the bottom of the ramp, she stood close to the heavy steel doors and waited. She checked the heat tape blanket, ran through the procedure in her mind. Every scenario had been thought of either during her climb, in her mad dreams, or during the walk through the wild outside. This would work, she told herself. The mechanics were sound. The only reason no one had survived a cleaning was because they never had help. They couldn't bring tools or resources. But she had. Time seemed to pass not at all. It was like her delicate and precious watch when she forgot to wind it. The trapped soil along the edge of the ramp shifted about impatiently with her. And Juliet wondered if maybe the cleaning had been called off, if she would die alone. That would be better, she told herself. She took a deep breath, wishing she would have brought more air, enough for a return trip, just in case. But she had been too worried about the cleaning going through to consider that it might not. After a long wait, her nerves swelling and heart racing, she heard a noise inside, a metallic scraping of gears. Juliet tensed, her arms rippling with chills, her throat constricting. This was it. She shifted in place,
listening to the great grind of those heavy doors as they prepared to disgorge poor Lucas. She unfolded part of the heat blanket and waited. It would all go so quickly, she knew, but she would be in control. No one could come in and stop her. With a terrible screech, the doors to Silo 18 parted, and a hiss of argon blasted out at her. Juliet leaned into it. The fog consumed her. She pushed blindly forward, groping ahead of herself, the blanket flapping noisily against her chest. She expected to run into him, to find herself wrestling a startled and frightened man, had prepared herself to need to wrestle him, hold him down, get him wrapped up tightly in the blanket. But there was no one in the doorway. Nobody struggling to get out, to get away from the coming purge of flames. Juliet practically fell into the airlock. Her body expected resistance like a boot at the top of a darkened stairway and found instead empty space. As the argon cleared and the door began to grind shut, she had a brief hope, a tiny fantasy that there was no cleaning, that the doors had simply been opened for her, welcoming her back. Maybe someone had seen her on the hillside and had taken a chance, had forgiven her, and all would be okay. But as soon as she could see through the billowing gas, she saw that this was not the case. A man in a cleaning suit was kneeling in the center of the airlock, hands on his thighs, facing the inner door. Lucas. Juliet raced to him as a halo of light bloomed in the room, the fire nozzles spitting on and reflecting off the shimmering plastic. The door thunked shut behind her, locking them both inside. Juliet shook the blanket loose and shuffled around so he could see her, so he would know he wasn't alone. The suit couldn't hide the shock. Lucas, startled, his arms leaping up in alarm, even as the flames began to lance out. She nodded, knowing he could see her through her clear dome, even if she couldn't see him. With a sweeping twirl she had practiced in her mind 1,000 times, she spread the blanket over his head and knelt down swiftly, covering herself as well. It was dark under the heat tape. The temperature outside was rising. She tried to shout to Lucas that it was going to be okay, but her voice sounded muffled, even inside her own helmet. Tucking the edges of the blanket down beneath her knees and feet, she wiggled until it was tightly pinned. She reached forward and tried to tuck the material under him as well, making sure his back was fully protected. Lucas seemed to know what she was doing. His gloved hands fell to her arms and rested there. She could feel how still he was, how calm. She couldn't believe he was going to wait, had chosen to burn rather than clean. She couldn't remember anyone ever making that choice. This worried her as they huddled together in the darkness, everything growing warm. The flames licked against the heat tape, striking the blanket with enough force to be felt, like a buffeting wind. The temperature shot up, sweat leaping out on her lip and forehead, even with all the superior lining of her suit. The blanket wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't keep Lucas alive in his suit. The fear in her heart was only for him, even as her skin began to heat up. Her panic seemed to leach into him, or maybe he was feeling the burns even worse. His hands trembled against her. And then she literally felt him go mad, felt him change his mind, begin to burn something. Lucas pushed her away from himself, bright light entering their protective dome as he began to crawl out from under it, kicking away. Juliet screamed for him to stop. She scrambled after him, clutching his arm, his leg, his boot, but he stomped her. Kicked at her, beat her with his fists, frantically tried to get away. The blanket fell off her head, and the light nearly blinded her. She felt the intense heat, could hear her dome pop and make noises, saw the clear bubble dip in above her and warp. She couldn't see Lucas, couldn't feel him, just saw blinding light and felt searing heat, scorching her wherever her suit crinkled against her body. She screamed in pain and yanked the blanket back over her head, covering the clear plastic. And the flames raged on. She couldn't feel him, couldn't see him. There would be no way to find him. 1,000 burns erupted across her body like so many knives gouging her flesh. Juliet sat alone under that thin film of protection, burning up, enduring the raging flames, and wept hot tears. Her body convulsed with sobs and anger, cursing the fire, the pain, the silo, the entire world. Until, eventually, she had no more tears, and the fuel ran its course. The boiling temperature dropped to a mere scalding, and Juliet could safely shrug off the steaming blanket. Her skin felt as if it were on fire. It burned wherever it touched the interior of her suit. She looked for Lucas and found she didn't have to look far. He was lying against the door, his suit charred and flaking in the few places it remained intact. His helmet was still in place, saving her the horror of seeing his young face, but it had melted and deformed far worse than hers. She crawled closer, aware that the door behind her was opening, that they were coming for her, that it was all over. She had failed. Juliet whimpered when she saw the places his body had been exposed. The suit and charcoal liners boiled away. There was his arm, charred black, his stomach, oddly distended, his tiny hands, so small and thin and burned to a... No. She didn't understand. She wept anew. She threw her gloved and steaming hands against her bubbled dome and cried out in shock, in a mix of anger and blessed relief. This was not Lucas dead before her. This was a man who deserved none of her tears. 29. Silo 18. Awareness, like sporadic jolts of pain from her burns, came and went. Juliet remembered a billowing fog, boots stomping all around her, lying on her side in the oven of an airlock. She watched the way the world warped out of shape as her helmet, a viscous thing, continued to sag toward her, melting. A bright silver star hovered in her vision, waving as it settled beyond her dome. Peter Billings peered through her helmet at her, shook her scalded shoulders, cried out to the people stomping around, telling them to help. They lifted her up and out of that steaming place, sweat dripping from faces, a melted suit cut from her body. Juliet floated through her old office like a ghost, flat on her back, the squeal of a fussy wheel below her, past the rows and rows of steel bars, an empty bench in an empty cell. They carried her in circles, down. She woke to the beeping of her heart, these machines checking in on her, a man dressed like her father. He was the first to notice her awake. His eyebrows lifted, a smile, a nod to someone over her shoulder. And Lucas was there, his face, so familiar, so strange, was in her blurry vision. She felt his hand in hers, She knew that hand had been there a while, that he had been there a while. He was crying and laughing, brushing her cheek. Jules wanted to know what was so funny, what was so sad. He just shook his head as she drifted back to sleep. It wasn't just that the burns were bad, it's that they were everywhere. The days of recovery were spent sliding in and out of painkiller fogs. Every time she saw Lucas, she apologized. Everyone was making a fuss. Peter came. There were piles of notes from down deep, but nobody was allowed up. Nobody else to see her but the man dressed like her father and women who reminded her of her mom. Her head cleared quickly once they let it. Juliet came out of what felt like a deep dream, weeks of haze, nightmares of drowning and burning, of being outside, of dozens of silos just like hers. The drugs had kept the pain at bay, but her consciousness too. She didn't mind the stings and aches if it meant winning back her mind. It was an easy trade.
Hey.
She flopped her head to the side, and Lucas was there. Was he ever not? A blanket fell from his chest as he leaned forward, held her hand. He smiled.
You're looking better.
Juliet licked her lips. Her mouth was dry.
Where am I? The infirmary on 33. Just take it easy. Do you want me to get you anything?
She shook her head. It felt amazing to be able to move, to respond to words. She tried to squeeze his hand.
I'm sore, she said weakly.
Lucas laughed. He looked relieved to hear this.
I bet.
She blinked and looked at him.
There's an infirmary on 33?
His words were on a delay. He nodded gravely.
I'm sorry, but it's the best in the silo, and we could keep you safe. But forget that. Rest. I'll go grab the nurse.
He stood, a thick book spilling from his lap and tumbling into the chair, burying itself in the blanket and pillows.
Do you think you can eat?
She nodded, turned her head back to face the ceiling and the bright lights, everything coming back to her, memories popping up like the tingle of pain on her skin. She read folded notes for days and cried. Lucas sat by her side, collecting the ones that spilled to the floor, like paper planes tossed from landings. He apologized over and over, blubbering like he was the one who'd done it. Juliet read all of them a dozen times, trying to keep straight who was gone and who was still signing their names. She couldn't believe it about Knox. Some things seemed immutable, like the great stairway. She wept for him and for Mark, wanted desperately to see Shirley, was told that she couldn't. Ghosts visited her when the lights were out. Juliet would wake up, eyes crusted over, pillow wet, Lucas rubbing her forehead and telling her it would be okay. Peter came often. Juliet thanked him over and over. It was all Peter, all Peter. He had made the choice. Lucas told her of the stairway, his march to cleaning, hearing her voice on Peter's radio, the implications of her being alive. Peter had taken the risk, had listened. That had led to him and Lucas talking. Lucas had said forbidden things, was in no danger of being sent anyplace worse, said something that confused her about being a bad virus, a catching cold. The radio barked with reports from mechanical of people surrendering. Bernard sentenced them to death anyway. And Peter had a decision to make. Was he the final law, or did he owe something to those who put him in place? Did he do what was right or what was expected of him? It was so easy to do the latter, but Peter Billings was a good man. Lucas told him so on that stairwell. He told them that this was where they'd been put by fate, but what they did going forward defined them. That was who they were. He told Peter that Bernard had killed a man, that he had proof. Lucas had done nothing to deserve this. Peter pointed out that every ounce of IT security was 100 levels away. There was only one gun up top, only one law, his. 30 weeks later, Silo 18. The three of them sat around the conference table, Juliet adjusting the gauze bandage on her hand to cover the raised lace of scar tissue peeking out. The coveralls they'd given her were loose to minimize the pain, but the undershirt itched everywhere it touched. She sat in one of the plush chairs and rolled back and forth with a push of her toes, impatient, ready to get out of there. But Lucas and Peter had things to discuss. They had escorted her this close to the exit, this close to the great stairwell, only to sit her down in that room. To get some privacy, they had said. The looks on their faces made her nervous. Nobody said anything for a while. Peter used the excuse of sending a tech for some water, but when the pitcher came and the glasses were filled, nobody reached for a drink. Lucas and Peter exchanged nervous glances. Juliet grew tired of waiting.
"What is it?" she asked. "Can I go? I feel like you've been delaying this for days."
She glanced at her watch, wiggled her arm so it would fall from the bandage on her wrist and she could see the tiny face. She stared across the table at Lucas and had to laugh at the worry on his face.
"Are you trying to keep me here forever? Because I told everyone in the deep that I'd be seeing them tomorrow night."
Lucas turned to Peter.
"Oh, come on, guys, spit it out. What's troubling you? The doc said I was fine for the trip down, and I told you I'd check in with Marsh and Hank if I had any problems. I'm gonna be late enough as it is if I don't get a move on."
"Okay," Lucas said, letting out a sigh. It was as though he'd given up on Peter being the one. "It's been a few weeks."
"And you two have made it feel like months."
She twisted the dial on the side of her watch, an ancient tick returning like it had never left.
"It's just that..."
Lucas coughed into his fist, clearing his throat.
"We couldn't give you all the notes that were sent to you."
He frowned at her, looked guilty.
Juliet's heart dropped. She sagged forward, waiting for it.
More names would be coming to move from one sad list to another. Lucas held up his palms.
"Nothing like that," he said quickly, recognizing the worry on her face. "God, sorry, nothing like that." "Good news," Peter said. "Congratulatory notes."
Lucas shot him a look that told Juliet she might think otherwise.
"Well, it is news."
He looked across the table at her. His hands were folded in front of him, resting on the marred wood, just like hers. It felt as though they might both move them several inches until they met, until fingers interlocked. It would be so natural after weeks of practice. But that was something worried friends did in hospitals, right? Juliet pondered this while Lucas and Peter went on about elections.
"Wait, what?"
She blinked and looked up from his hands, the last part coming back to her.
"It was the timing," Lucas explained. "You were all anyone was talking about," Peter said.
Go back, she said. "What did you say?"
Lucas took a deep breath.
"Bernard was running unopposed. When we sent him out to cleaning, the election was called off. But then news got around about your miraculous return, and people showed up to vote anyway." "A lot of people," Peter added.
Lucas nodded.
"It was quite a turnout, more than half the silo."
"Yeah, but... mayor?"
She laughed and looked around the scratched-up conference table, bare except for the untouched glasses of water. "Isn't there something I need to sign? Some official way to turn this nonsense down?" The two men exchanged glances.
"Well, that's sort of the thing," Peter said.
Lucas shook his head. "I told you."
"Well, we were hoping you'd accept."
"Me? Mayor?" Juliet crossed her arms and sat back, painfully, against the chair. She laughed.
You've got to be kidding. I wouldn't know the first thing about...
Well, you wouldn't have to, Peter said, leaning forward. You have an office, you shake some hands, sign some things, and make people feel better.
Lucas tapped him on the arm and shook his head. Juliet felt a flush of heat across her skin, which just made her scars and wounds itch more.
"Here's the thing," Lucas said as Peter sat back in his chair. "We need you. There's a power vacuum at the top. Peter's been in this post longer than anyone, and you know how long that's been."
She was listening.
"Remember our conversations all those nights? Remember you telling me what the other silo was like? Do you understand how close to that we got?"
She chewed her lip, reached for one of the glasses, and took a long drink of water. Peering over the lip of the glass, she waited for him to continue.
"We have a chance, Jules, to hold this place together, to put it back, to..."
She set the glass down and lifted her palm for him to stop. "If we were to do this," she told them coolly, looking from one of their expectant faces to the other, "if we do it, we do it my way." Peter frowned. "No more lying," she said. "We give truth a chance." Lucas laughed nervously. Peter shook his head. "Now listen to me," she said. "This isn't crazy. It's not the first time I've thought this through. Hell, I've had weeks of nothing but thinking."
"The truth?"
Peter asked. She nodded. "I know what you two are thinking. You think we need lies, fear." Peter nodded. "But what could we invent that's scarier than what's really out there?" She pointed toward the roof and waited for that to sink in. "When these places were built, the idea was that we were all in this together. Together, but separate, ignorant of one another, so we didn't infect the others if one of us got sick. But I don't want to play for that team. I don't agree with their cause. I refuse." Lucas tilted his head.
"Yeah, but..."
"So it's us against them. And not the people in the silos, not the people working day to day who don't know, but those at the top who do. Silo 18 will be different, full of knowledge, of purpose. Think about it. Instead of manipulating people, why not empower them? Let them know what we're up against and have that drive our collective will." Lucas raised his eyebrows. Peter ran his hands up through his hair. "You guys should think about it." She pushed away from the table. "Take your time. I'm going to go see my family and friends, but I'm either in or I'll be working against you. I'll be spreading the truth one way or the other." She smiled at Lucas. It was a dare, but he would know she wasn't joking. Peter stood and showed her his palms.
"Well, can we at least agree not to do anything rash until we meet again?"
Juliet crossed her arms. She dipped her chin.
"Good,"
Peter said, letting out his breath and dropping his arms. She turned to Lucas. He was studying her, his lips pursed, and she could tell he knew. There was only one way this was going forward, and it scared the hell out of him. Peter turned and opened the door. He looked back at Lucas.
"Can you give us a second?"
Lucas asked, standing up and walking toward the door. Peter nodded. He turned and shook Juliet's hand as she thanked him for the millionth time. He checked his star, which hung askew on his chest, and then left the conference room. Lucas crossed out of sight of the window,
grabbed Juliet's hand and pulled her toward the door.
"Are you kidding me?" she asked. "Did you really think I would just accept that job and..."
Lucas pressed his palm against the door and forced it shut. Juliet faced him, confused, then felt his arm slide gently around her waist, mindful of her wounds.
"You are right," he whispered.
He leaned close, put his head by her shoulder.
"I'm stalling. I don't want you to go."
His breath was warm against her neck. Juliet relaxed. She forgot what she was about to say. She wrapped an arm around his back, held his neck with her other hand. "It's okay," she said, relieved to hear him say it, to finally admit it. And she could feel him trembling, could hear his broken and stuttered exhalations.
"It's okay,"
she whispered again, pressing her cheek against his, trying to comfort him.
"I'm not going anywhere for good."
Lucas pulled away to look at her. She felt him searching her face, tears welling up in his eyes. His body had started shaking. She could feel it in his arms, his back. And then she realized, as he pulled her close and pressed his lips against hers, that it wasn't fear or panic she was sensing in him. It was nerves. She whimpered into their kiss, the rush to her head better than the doctor's drugs. It washed away any pain caused by his hands clutching her back. She couldn't remember the last time she'd felt lips move against her own. She kissed him back, and it was over too soon. He stepped away and held her hands, glanced nervously at the window.
"It's a...
That was nice," she told him, squeezing his hands.
"We should probably..."
He jerked his chin toward the door. Juliet smiled. "Yeah, probably so." He walked her through the entrance hall of IT into the landing. A tech was waiting with her shoulder bag. Juliet saw that Lucas had padded the strap with rags, worried about her wounds.
"Are you sure you don't need an escort?"
"I'll be fine," she said, tucking her hair behind her ears. She shrugged the bag higher up on her neck. "I'll see you in a week or so."
"You can radio me,"
he told her. Juliet laughed. "I know." She grabbed his hand and gave it a squeeze, then turned to the great stairwell. Someone in the passing crowd nodded at her. She was sure she didn't know him, but nodded back. Other chins were turning to follow her. She passed through them and grabbed that great curved bar of steel that wound its way through the heart of things, that held those pouting and worn treads together as life after life was ground away on them. And Juliet lifted her boot to that first step on a journey far too long in coming.
"Hey!"
Lucas called after her. He ran across the landing, his brows lowered in confusion.
"I thought you were heading down, going to see your friends."
Juliet smiled at him. A porter passed by, loaded down with his burdens. Juliet thought of how many of her own had recently slipped away. "Family first," she told Lucas. She glanced up that great shaft in the center of the humming silo and lifted her boot to the next tread. "I've got to go see my father first." Epilogue, Silo 17.
32!
Elise danced up the steps of the Down Deep, her breath trailing in long curls of steam behind her, the clumsy feet of youth making a racket with their heavy boots on the wet steel.
32 steps, Mr. Solo.
She made it back up to the landing, tripped over the last step, and caught herself on her hands and knees. Elise stayed there a minute, head down, probably deciding if she would cry or be okay. Solo waited for her to cry. Instead, she looked up at him, a wide smile telling him she was fine. There was a gap in that smile where a loose tooth had come out and had not yet been replaced.
"It's going down,"
she said. She wiped her hands on her new coveralls and ran over to him.
"The water's going down."
Solo grunted as she threw herself into his hip and hugged his waist. He draped an arm across her back while she squeezed him.
"Everything's gonna be great."
Solo held the railing with one hand and looked down past the rust-colored stain of old blood beneath his feet, looked past that memory and into the receding waters far below. He reached for the radio on his hip. Juliet would be the most excited to know.
"I think you're right,"
he told little Elise, pulling his radio free.
"I think everything's gonna be just fine."
This has been Wool, Omnibus Edition, Wool 1 through 5, written by Hugh Howey, narrated by Minnie Good. Copyright Lifetime Plus 70 Years by Hugh Howey. Production copyright 2012 by Hugh Howey.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.